This next story begins on the other side of the world and inside the world of disco music. Disco Diwani means disco crazy in Urdu. This song was a hit in Pakistan in 1981, and it comes to our attention courtesy of the Pakistani-born writer Kamala Shamsi, who remembers the music video.
This woman and this man, and the woman, of course, is particularly important, who was sort of out there talking about, you know, the craziness of disco. And it was about a feeling of a certain kind of social liberation that later went away.
Went away as Pakistan's conservative government became even more conservative. Shamsi wrote about this song in Granta magazine, which just published a whole issue on Pakistan. She tells the story of religious tension as heard through Pakistan's pop music.
The Islam of the subcontinent had very often and forever really, from the beginning, had been much more influenced by Sufi Islam.
That's a branch of Islam that's considered relatively open and tolerant, very personal. Many Sufis welcome music and dance. From the 1970s onward, that form of Islam was under pressure from a conservative military ruler with very different ideas.
Ziaul-Haq decided to bring in very rigid Islam, which was about sort of the most extreme versions of what Islamic law could be.
I'm interested to hear you say that because it would be tempting for me to think of this as Islam versus the West. You're telling me it's different ideas of Islam that were in conflict in Pakistan.
You know, it's only in the West that people think it's Islam versus the West. I think even if you look at the last 9 years, these war on terror years, many more Muslims have been killed by other Muslims than non-Muslims. So no, it was about what kind of Muslims are we? When people outside Pakistan talk about, you know, Pakistan as this Muslim state or Islamic state, they almost tend to talk as though that means one thing. And actually, it means millions of things.
Well, let's move a little forward in time as we look at this conflict as expressed in music. There's a music video that you write about called Dil Dil Pakistan. Let's listen a little bit first. I feel like if I were a radio DJ, this would be the point at which I would say, okay, we're listening to Duran Duran.
Well, this was 1987, you know, so I'm sure Duran Duran was some kind of influence there.
What was the story of this song? It's still a time of military dictatorship. It's still an Islamist military dictatorship. How did this video get out to the public?
In a very clever way, by disguising itself as a patriotic song. Dil Dil Pakistan means my heart beats for Pakistan, or literally heart, heart, Pakistan. And Pakistan television, which was heavily censored, had a competition for a patriotic song. And whoever won this competition, their song would be aired on Independence Day, 14th August 1987. And there was a radio producer called Shoaib Mansoor who was very clever and saw this was the opportunity to get a certain kind of pop music on the air. But the lyrics were incredibly patriotic, so it won the competition and it played all over and became just this phenomenal, phenomenal hit. And it was great. In the video, they were sort of going around in leather jackets and on motorbikes, and it felt subversive, which is ridiculous if you actually look at the lyrics, which are the most unsubversive things ever. And for us at 14, it was just, wow, that's really exciting. You know, we thought of in terms of coolness, you know. Here were some Pakistanis being cool at last. Mm-hmm. Our nation, it seemed to us, suffered from huge deficit coolness, except where certain cricket players were concerned. So it was very nice to be able to say, there are some cool Pakistanis.
Well, let's move a little closer to the present day. There's a group called Janoon, which mm-hmm. became very famous in the 1990s. They're still playing today with some changes in membership. But let's listen to one of the hits from Janoon.
They would go back to Sufi poets, take their lyrics, and put them to music which would combine influences of Pakistani music, and you'd have sort of the tabla or the sitar or whatever, as well as the electric guitar. Mm. So it was a really new sound.
A new sound representing moderate Islam. Junoon's guitarist had been one of the stars of that band that reminded us of Duran Duran. And so was another singer who didn't turn out moderate at all.
Junaid Jamshed went the completely opposite way and came under the influence of a group called Tablighi Jamaat, which is a proselytizing group within Islam. You know, their belief is that you must follow the example of the Prophet Muhammad in whatever way you can. And so they're very worried about, you know, what the length of your beard is and what kind of clothes you're wearing and the sort of stuff which the Sufis would say is nonsense. In fact, Junaid Jamshed then took to saying that pop music was un-Islamic and that he rejected that part of his life and instead has taken to singing religious songs.
Ey Allah, Ey Allah, tu hi ata, tu judo saha.
Although he does wobble now and then, I mean, in the early days particularly, he would say, it's un-Islamic, and then he'd appear at a pop concert. And then he'd say, no, I only did that because I had contracts with Pepsi. And for a while there, you know, he couldn't even seem to quite make a break from it.
When you're spending time in Karachi, Pakistan these days, what's on the radio? What's exciting young people or anybody?
The really exciting thing in music in Pakistan is a thing called Coke Studio, which is sort of live acoustic sessions where you have musicians coming together. You know, you might have Qawwal and Oud, the sort of Sufi singer in the very traditional style, coming together with a rock singer.
And novelist Kamala Shamsi says it's this kind of song that's on her music player now, with the setting on repeat. Shamsi wrote in Granta magazine about Pakistan's religious struggles as heard through its pop music. Her novels include Cartography and Broken Verses. This is NPR News.